So I wanted to sort of go ahead and thank you before we start that you're throwing yourself on the coals for the betterment of mankind, I believe.
Oh, well,
I'm referring, of course, to the fact that you have no idea what is about to happen. And for all you know, this might be a massive social engineering project on the scale of the Truman Show to make you look like a fool in front of the internet. I'm just saying it's possible. You don't know that. You don't know that it's not going to happen.
I guess I don't know that that's not going to happen.
I promise that me and the rest of the angry gods have not orchestrated this terrible animation upon your fate for the purposes of some weird, like, highly beleaguered joke that we just waited until you got, like, to the point where you started dressing nice to perpetrate on you, where it's like, haha, he looks like he's on the right path. It is time.
Oh, wow. I didn't even consider any of this.
No, it's bigger than you think, man. All right, shall we start?
Let's do it. Do you want to, like, intro? Because you have a whole thing, so.
Oh, yeah, okay. Well, all right, let's see here. Hi, Joshua.
Hello. Hello, Teague.
How you doing?
I'm pretty good. How are you doing?
I'm good. You seen that film, Ex Machina?
You know, I have. Have you seen it?
I have, and I'd like to have just a deeply spoilerific conversation about it, if you wouldn't mind.
I would love it. Let's do it.
First of all, I'm assuming that you liked it. I liked it just a really huge amount, a very significant amount.
Yeah, I really liked it as well. I'm not surprised that a lot of other people have liked it. The reaction to it has been really overwhelmingly like, this is the awesome sci-fi movie this year. Which, I guess last year it was Edge of Tomorrow. They're very different movies, but it seems like every so often we kind of get that sci-fi movie that people are like, this is the one. And it's this one this year.
I hadn't occurred to me that there was one of those for every year, but I like that premise. Okay, let me throw an observation at you, because one of the things that I enjoyed about Ex Machina that it occurred to me as I was watching it might actually be me enjoying something that everyone else in the theater was getting mad about, or at least feeling less enthralled about, which is this. Ex Machina didn't surprise me kind of anywhere in the third act, but I don't mean that as a diss. I mean that in terms of Ex Machina has done something that I think my argument will basically be it is ultimately admirable and now preferable to do what Ex Machina has done in this regard, which is they totally forewent this sort of recent trite trend of throwing in some often trivial twist in the third act with the attempt of, like, I guess, exciting people while they're in the theater on the assumption that they're already getting bored with my film. And I believe in so doing, they're actually swinging for farther fences by saying, we think we can stick this more simple landing that doesn't have 25 twists in it for the purposes of I don't even know why. We think we can stick this simple landing and become something larger than the 2 hours you're spending watching this. We think we can become a thing that sits on your shelf and we are a good story told well that will last for a long time. We'll be a parable. We're aiming for the shelf. We're not aiming for your, you know, Rotten Tomatoes review right now. We're aiming for you to be able to pull this down over and over again. And it reminds me of other things. And there are other examples, and they're all spoilers for me to sort of go into what I think other things are in the same category would sort of almost require spoiling them. But without spoiling them, I'll say there are things like Breaking Bad comes to mind, where it's some people were saying, wow, I was expecting more twists and turns. But ultimately, I think denying people the sort of ADD requirement for more twists and turns the first time they watch it to make it more exciting the first time they watch it in the service of, you know what, we're just going to stick this landing very solidly, because after you're sort of no longer excited and in the moment for the first time when you're coming back to this again and again and again, the story being well told and having been about something and it was about the same thing the whole time, and when it came to an end you were like, cool, this story has ended and I understand why you told it to me, is way more valuable than watching Yoda do backflips with a lightsaber or something. So that's my theory, is that Ex Machina actually did something simpler and ostensibly easier than most sci-fi films have been doing lately to great effect, to the point where it heightened the issue into my awareness. And now it makes me think that basically every other time someone ever attempts to do some sort of a twisty third act thing, which is basically all movies these days, it's wacky, trite bullshit, and Ex Machina is the way to go. If you can swing for the fences and land a movie on the shelf, you have done your job better than, you know, the sort of same equivalent thought process writing the last two episodes of like a season of TV, but you know there's going to be another season, so you're just throwing twists in for the sake of throwing them in. I think Ex Machina has a simpler, harder job to do, and it did it well. Do you agree with this premise that there is a a simpler thing that they chose to do in lieu of doing something all twisty and bullshittish? Or am I totally off on a weird rail?
It's interesting. The first thing I think of when you say that is the conversation that Oscar Isaac has with Domhnall Gleeson kind of early in the movie, where I think it is their first conversation, where he says something to the effect of, I know you have kind of these preconceptions about who I am because I'm your boss and there's these formalities, but let's just let go of that and just be people and have
a casual
conversation.
Let's just let us be two guys in a room.
Exactly, yeah. And I think that's kind of that kind
of... That's a very astute point, sir. Well done. Let us just be a story in an audience. That's the movie. That's exactly the point I was making, and you did it in like 25 minutes less than it took me to make the opening statement. My premise is that... The lack of some sort of a major twistiness, or in fact, if people were complaining about it being predictable, this movie was aiming for something higher than evading their prediction, I believe. And in so doing, is at least it's got a loftier goal. Whether or not it lived up to it, I guess, is a second question. And you were making a point about how it's possible that people could have thought that the betrayal was meant to be a twist that shook my predictions, and I'm just too cunning, I suppose. I think that's what you were getting at, is that I was very cunning.
Well, I think the betrayal is a really interesting aspect of the narrative in that way, because, like I said, I didn't see it coming when it happened, but that was mostly because I was seeing it from the perspective of Domhnall Gleeson. But once it happened, it was one of those things where it just, like, oh, of course that's what she would do. It immediately rationalized itself. But
you mean the betrayal of Domhnall to Oscar Isaac?
Oh, I mean the betrayal of Ava to him when she leaves him locked in the room.
I
forgot about it. No, that betrayal was obviously from the first scene. Yeah, that's.
Well, now we have, yeah, okay.
But yeah, yes. When she leaves him locked in the room, presumably to starve to death, that I didn't see coming.
I didn't see that coming either, actually. But it occurs to me that I had forgotten that I didn't see that coming. But it didn't actually hit me as much of a twisty twist either. It struck me as an interesting thing worth like sort of chewing on later, if in sort of highfalutin navel-gazing conversations like this one. But my general impression was like, this just said it was going to tell me a story and did and stopped when it was done. And it never once got self-conscious about the fact that it might have lost my attention or interest. It just landed the plane solidly. I think making it a movie that will live longer on my shelf than it would have if it tried to. If its goal was to keep me entertained for 2 hours as opposed to keep me entertained for years to come. Is that too highfalutin?
I think that makes perfect sense, and that is exactly how I will now describe this movie.
Aha!
Yeah, it's... Here's a thought. I think that the way that the final scene works is interesting because it reveals Ava to be the main character in a way that she really wasn't, because the movie starts Ava's the only character name I remember, but the movie starts with Domhnall Gleeson, and it's tracking him in every scene up till the very end, when it kind of turns to Ava's perspective, and she leaves him, and she goes, and she gets the skin from the other robots, and she leaves. And I think maybe more than anything, that's what threw me, is that it's a very distinct shift, and that's more of a surprise than the action that's part of it, leaving him in the room. And I
like that. I'd forgotten that was a key part of the shift. That shifting of perspective is interesting, and I like it a lot. Continue. Sorry.
I don't know where I was going with that. It
occurred to me, the thought that it sounded like you were getting ready to make, and then I interrupted you because I'm a very, very rude person, and I apologize. is that the movie up until it's, I don't know if this is what the movie is trying to do, or if it's trying to make some sort of a point about this, or if it's just an incident of the way it's designed. But one of the curious, I don't know, results, perhaps even side effects, but I'm assuming there's some auteur-ness going on here. I saw your review and I didn't realize that the director was talking about how he doesn't really go in for auteur theory. I agree. That's a really odd thing in the context of this movie, but the movie does not present Ava as being a fully realized person, and that's what gets you in the end. That's what punches the audience member in the face at the end, is that this whole time you thought you were treating her like she was really a real person and good for you, but then you didn't think she had the capacity for any of these things. Who are you to give that judgment? Like, what on earth makes you think she wouldn't be capable of doing all of these things, you weird reductive dickhole.
Yeah, and I think...
Well, that's what I heard.
Yeah, I think that what that feeds into, really, is that she, up to that point, could be perceived as just a factor in Domhnall Gleeson's arc. If he's the main character, is just kind of a thing that he interacts with that is really narratively just all about who he is and the journey that he's on. And the fact that the movie ends with her completely taking that away from him and taking the perspective of the movie away from him is really interesting. And it's not something that I feel like you would normally see.
Well, I agree. But indeed, surprising him with her agency. Like, he had made assumptions of her meekness and naivete that we as the audience were sharing in that all got proven wrong, because we shouldn't have in the first place ever assumed that she wasn't actually the totally sentient dimensional person she was presented to us as the entire time. We went along with the casual revelation in the beginning of the film that, holy crap, she is sentient. I'm not talking to a machine. This Turing test sort of T-ball pitch that this movie started us with has been passed, and I agree with the premise of the film as it's unfolding in front of me that she is a sentient creature. This is not at least some sort of like an artificial consciousness. It's a real consciousness, and it's, you know, the genesis of it doesn't matter anymore. And now I'm going to proceed into the what I assume the movie is trying to get at, which is the horror of what Oscar Isaac is doing to this girl by keeping her locked up. And, you know, you do participate in that, and you buy into the assumption and the premise that she is a well-rounded person, she is a full human, and thus what Oscar Isaac is trying to box her in with is an act of evil. But then, Domhnall Gleeson and us, presumably most of us, if some of us at least, assume she needs our help and protection and defense to our own death. It's the fact that we were not giving her the benefit of agency to go, she might actually not be an incredibly naive, meek, helpless creature, you chauvinist asshole. She's playing you, you idiot. This is, you're not interacting with Eve from WALL-E. She's a person, and the fact that you were trying to reduce her and play into a much simpler version of her than she was trying to give you is what will ultimately undo you in the end. I feel like, you know, that revelation is meant to hit both Domhnall and us as a crucial failure of our appraisal of her up until that point.
Totally. And it's interesting that it kind of, in an ironic way, makes Oscar Isaac not the asshole in that situation, because he is the one saying that he was obviously keeping her imprisoned, but he at least is capable of understanding her capabilities and understanding her not as just the victim, the damsel in distress. And Domhnall Gleeson was totally taken in by her. And I think there is definitely something to be said for this movie and what it has to say about gender dynamics. They talk about it blatantly in conversation. And I think that might be, that's one of the primary things, is this idea that Domhnall Gleeson is so wrapped up in the idea that he is the protagonist, that he is the hero and he has come to save her, and that's ultimately his downfall, is in assuming that she needs him and that she has any reason to take him with her.
Right. I like that. That's interesting. It hadn't, and you know what? I don't think it may or may not belie my original premise, although it has shifted the way I'm framing it in my head. My original premise was that this movie settled for something greater than, oh no, hold on, this is totally playing into my premise, that it settled for something that's apparently simpler and less exciting, which has, I guess, many movies these days would assume it has the risk of losing the audience and generating kind of a, they're thinking in terms of a short tail with what are the reviews going to be on Rotten Tomatoes. And if people say that this is staid and stern and it unfolds predictably and in a way that doesn't really ever excite you enough to lift itself out of, you know, the swatch of other sci-fi movies that came out this year. And as such, they'll throw a bunch of shit at you and be like, what do you think? ? Credits. And then this movie just sort of played right into the end of a story that ends. I mean, you could tell another story with her, but it wouldn't make any sense. Like, it would only be a thing worth doing if you could tell an entirely new story about an entirely different point. But I think the point was made perfectly here. And again, I'm reacting largely to the fact that the story mechanics themselves were a very, very sure hand compared to what I'm A, used to seeing with sci-fi movies along these lines, and B, what I would expect from a first-time director like Alex Garland. I was just blown away by that choice, the commitment, the execution, and the fact that I think he stuck a landing when often people would try to do a triple backflip to be impressive at the last minute and break an ankle.
Yeah, that's a great way of putting it. I completely agree. It's a very it really does just make it look so easy. And I think what is maybe its greatest success is that it is able to be about so many of these things that we've been talking about and that everyone who's seen the movie has been talking about, but it doesn't kind of really force that. It doesn't... It's about these things, but it's not, like, about them. And, yeah. Like I said earlier, you could maybe make that argument, the opposite argument, just because of all these conversations that Oscar Isaac and Domhnall Gleeson have where they discuss these ideas. But the movie really...
Someone tell George Lucas that this is how you make a sci-fi movie with nothing but meetings in it.
Oh, man.
That's funny.
What was it? Oh, yeah, so...
People being bored by the fact that it was just people talking the whole time and how it was about its theme.
Yeah, exactly. I think it is pretty much all until the end. Just a bunch of scenes of two people talking. Yeah. And there's only three characters. So there's four characters, but one of them I don't think ever speaks. And she's an interesting, by the way, the fourth, the second robot.
The sort of valet character.
Yeah. I was having a conversation with someone the other day and who didn't like the movie as much, and one of the things they asked me was her being a robot supposed to be like a twist because it seemed really obvious. And I said pretty much what you said at the beginning, which is I agree that it's not a reveal, it's not like a surprising thing. I don't think it's really supposed to be a surprising thing, although if it is then, you know, all the better. If you were surprised for it.
Right.
But I think what it goes to more than anything is that it's part of a grander kind of moment, I think. Whether or not it's surprising to you that this character is actually a robot, from what I remember, that reveal is part of kind of the grander reveal of the way that Oscar Isaac has been treating the robots. I think it's part of that scene.
I think the reveal there happens, and I agree with the point you were making, which is it happens in the larger context of the wave crashing on the shore when it comes to the point the movie's starting to, it's brought you up to speed on when it comes to how Oscar Isaac is treating these, we can call them people. And I agree with the sort of secondary premise, which is that it's not that this is or is not a particularly exciting reveal. As far as twists go, it's that I don't think it's really intending itself to be the twist qua twist. And my point is basically saying I'm not interested in the version of this movie where it would have executed that twist thinking it was being clever. I don't think this movie was. I think this movie was like, I'm sure you saw this coming, but can I get to my point, please?
Yeah.
And that I believe is playing into the longer game where whether or not we find this obvious in the moment right now, just based on what movies we saw last year and what we've been talking about on the internet this last 6 months and whatever random stuff we're playing into right now that the movie might well think about and be like, all right, well, I think it's been a long time since we have a movie with this twist, so I can be this. It's like, no, dude, this movie, think of in terms of someone watching this movie in 2065. They just want this to be a movie that stands alone, and whether or not it appeals to the 2065 person will not have anything to do with how cleverly it integrated itself with our modern expectations. It was just trying to be a parable unto itself. And the little twisty twists for the sake of having twisty twists aren't the point. And not to say that there's no value or artistic merit to doing twisty twist stuff. There are movies that have twisty twist stuff in them that I think function beautifully. And a great part of the feat that makes them great is in the execution and in making a film that stands well on both sides of your knowledge of there being a twist. And I think that a lot of the best examples of movies where someone will be like, that was a very successful movie and it was a total twisty twist movie, actually aren't that great as films. I don't want to, this is the sort of thing where you really can't just name off the list of examples because it's inherently a spoiler. But common sort of, I don't know how to tell, list the movies that I'm thinking
about. You're
talking
about like the puzzle box movies that like advertise themselves as it's going to be so, you know, you're not going to know what's happening and it's there's going to be so much going on. Like
certainly that, but I would even wrap it larger and include things like movies where you didn't know there was going to be a twist and then you were blown away by the fact that there was. Generally, I mean movies where they seem to regard an audience's surprise at the end of a story as a good thing. I think there are only a few scenarios wherein that movie can survive the test of time. I mean, I guess, like, I'm going to go ahead and put a moratorium on Psycho. You're not supposed to know that, and I didn't, in fact, when I saw Psycho recently, but that's just because I live under a rock at most times. I didn't know that Norman Bates was the mom, and the mom was Norman Bates and all that. I didn't know that they were the same character, and that's meant to be a huge twist at the end that blows your mind. And people have known that twist for 50 years. Same with Empire, I guess, if you care. But Empire, the ending of Empire isn't predicated on the fact that Vader is Luke's father. That's just some heavy shit that Luke has to deal with. The ending of the story, well, actually, Empire doesn't end, but so this is a bad example. Let's go back to Psycho. The fact that you know, it's weird. Now I'm thinking about it. Have you seen Psycho recently? Do you kind of remember how the layout of the movie works? The last 15 minutes of that movie is a scene in a detective office.
Yeah, that
where,
I remember,
you know,
yeah.
Yeah, the black and white version of Chaz Palminteri leans against a desk and explains the entire premise, where it's like, what the hell? Guys, you just blew my mind with the twist. Roll credits. Actually, but then again, that would be the sort of modern thinking that I'm talking about and thinking that the twist is the point. So I wonder if the only reason I'm grandfathering Psycho in is being effective, I'd have to go back and watch it again, is because it's classic and it's Hitchcock and it just gets the pass. Because it is doing the sort of thing I'm talking about, where I don't think Psycho benefits much, and that can't be right. This is a philosophical issue for me, Josh, and I haven't worked my way through it yet. The idea being, is there value to a twist for the sake of having a twist? I don't think so. So if you do it artfully and in a way that's meaningful and allows for the story to exist as this sort of bauble that will always be self-contained, and good, even on repeat viewings, then I suppose that there's nothing inherently wrong with doing it in the artistic sense of, you know, aiming for some sort of a high artistic standard. I don't know exactly what I'm reacting to. I guess I just like the idea that a movie would try to not do that when it seems that so many movies do lately. It's strange. I don't know why I'm so surprised.
I found it
to be a very pleasant experience to be like, I am not surprised in this moment by sudden twists of fate, really. I mean, there are twists of fate, but that's just the end of the story, and it is sort of telegraphed, and the robot, the valet character is a robot, haha, you know, she never spoke English, that's because et cetera. Those sort of things do happen, but they are a bit telegraphed, and I don't think it's to the movie's detriment. In fact, I think it belies a strength in the movie that is admirable and should be repeated. But, you know, I can't put my finger on it much better than that, at least not in the moment.
You know what I think it might be, at least partially, is that some of the movies that you're talking about almost have this element of condescension to them, where they're like lording it over you, like we know a secret and we're not going to tell you and we're gonna lay it on you when you're least expect it, and I see why that can be annoying because it's not a very nice way for a movie to treat its audience, like it's better than its audience. And Ex Machina absolutely does not do that. It is very much it's on the same playing field as its audience. It's very, you know, like we've been saying, I don't think it expects any of these reveals to, or I think it does expect its audience to be on board with all of these things before it, like, quote unquote, reveals them, like the fourth character being a robot. It's not trying to act like, because a lot of the times with these movies with the big twists, the appeal is where you go back and watch it the second time and then you look for all the clues, right? You look for all the hints that the movie was dropping. And I can see how in certain cases when it's done kind of arbitrarily, how that can be, you get the impression that the movie is just being kind of a dick about it. Like, oh, you, it's not like, oh, we, look at all these hints, and you would never have noticed them if you didn't know. It's more like, oh, we were dropping all these hints, and you idiots didn't even see it. which is part of that just very condescending nature with these kind of very twisty, not always sci-fi, but sci-fi a lot of the time, movies.
I wonder if part of it is that the revelation that can be easily encapsulated in a drop the mic moment is, we'll find it much more difficult to be profound, because the revelations that'll stick with you and be an item of consideration for years to come, and you want to revisit the movie and examine its themes more. Ah, here's where it is. It's that the revelation that we're talking about, the, you know, what's in the box moment or what have you, is often only the answer to a 2-hour long puzzle, as opposed to being like an ending where maybe there's twistiness to it, but if the holy crap, the value of this movie moment, or at least the lasting value, the what you remember value of this movie moment, can be encapsulated in two sentences and weren't our minds blown, that revelation is two sentences long. You know, it's the piece of context A, and then you were wrong, though, because it's B. But it doesn't really spend any time, or it doesn't have any time to examine that, unless the twist happens in the beginning, but then you wouldn't call that a twist. You would just call that world building. So I wonder if it's just that when a movie isn't aiming for setting up some very finely tuned series of dominoes that haven't fallen over, and if you look at it from a certain angle, they seem to be all touching each other, and then at the last minute, moves the camera and goes, ha-ha, see, they're not touching at all, ha-ha, foreshortening. Do you see how you were wrong about this premise that I spent 2 hours building up? It was this thing instead. Like, the point of the movie becomes, it was this thing instead, not, instead of having it be some weird, crappy reveal where my QED moment will be me saying, it was this thing instead. Let's just spend 2 whole hours building up a thematic sentence. Or paragraph, I suppose. As opposed to having it be, like, the cinematic equivalent of The Aristocrats.
Well, yeah.
I don't know.
I'm thinking more about Psycho and just how it might...
Psycho might be an interesting sort of instructive example. It's a weird one, but it might be a useful one. It's totally common, and we can talk about it without spoiling it.
Yeah, I mean, well, I assume that... we've already kind of given it away, so I'm sorry if you haven't seen Psycho and didn't know, but you should watch it because it is good. The last scene in Psycho that you were talking about with where the doctor explains... the entire movie, just talking to everybody, is kind of what you're talking, like the good version would be an entire movie of that, where the movie doesn't do this big shocking reveal and then it takes a moment to explain it to you. It's like the entire movie is about that.
Right. The movie Psycho ends with the doctor asking for your permission to explain how it works and hope that you understand it. Please, in this last moment before I ask you all to, you know, have your tickets checked at the door, we validate your parking, have a good day, expand your mind as much as possible and try to imagine that this is a thing that's possible for human behavior to contain what he has done. As opposed to being 2 hours justifying the fact that this happened to Norman Bates' brain. This is who he is. The point of that reveal in Psycho is, if you take away the execution part and just get to what the story is meant to be about, and take away all of the sort of manifestations and machinations of the particular implementation of it being a twist, as opposed to just being entirely a story where, if in the beginning we knew Norman Bates was dressing up like his mom and being fucking creepy, the point the movie's getting at is the larger horror that any human mind can arrive at this point. And in 19, whenever that was, 60s something, mid 60s, you as modern America may or may not have the sort of psychological expertise to be able to deal with that. But I also swear to God that it's true. Deal with that horror, that this can happen to a human brain and you would not know it. He could be working at the hotel. He could just be that guy that offered you a sandwich. Yet it can contain these multitudes, these horrible multitudes. Instead of being 2 hours getting you to understand the true horror that this is a human brain as legitimate as any other, whether or not it makes decisions that we can get behind is a second question. It is a legitimate thing that a brain can be. Could be 2 hours of us understanding it and getting horrifyingly close to, if not agreeing with Norman, sympathizing and understanding it. And that's the theme of the movie, is getting you that in that much into the understanding of human behavior that amounts to dressing up like your mom and stabbing people in the shower. Whereas what Psycho does is it sort of tells you a story about other stuff the entire time. And, you know, the beginning, it actually literally is about other stuff, but it all comes to being, basically, it's a story about, on the face of it, it's a story about the interaction between these people and Norman Bates. It's not about Norman Bates. It's about the interactions. Where the horror will entirely rely upon the fact that Norman Bates is a thing that happened in the first place. In the movie of Psycho, we get the try to expand your mind and understand that this can happen to human behavior shit, where you have to really extend yourself and try to comprehend and be fair in judgment of this other human being's modus, is contained within a doctor asking you for permission to, can you please, you know, take it with a grain of salt that this is actually possibly a legitimate brain. You know, it can happen. These kind of things happen. Shrug. As opposed to being like, it's 2 hours explaining to you and demonstrating that these kinds of things are real. It's 10 kind of interminable minutes of a doctor swearing to God that they are. But you didn't learn it. You didn't experience it. You didn't feel it. You just saw him stab some people. And if the doctor said, no, actually, he's a robot designed to stab people, you would have walked away with about as much understanding of Norman Bates. It doesn't matter. Like, in the movie that we are sold is not a story about the horror that it wants to be about. It's a story about horrifying things happening to pairs of people. And then at the end of it, it's like, hey, by the way, the mom thing was a red herring. Haha.
Yeah, I think this goes back to what we were talking about with the perspective, because now I'm imagining a version of Ex Machina, which opens with a scene of Oscar Isaac, you know, I don't know who he would be talking to, I guess the other robot, explaining, like, so I'm going to bring this guy in, and he's going to think he's doing the Turing test, but actually, Ava is going to be trying to manipulate him into helping her escape. And then the rest of the movie plays out. That movie, even if it was exactly
good.
Even if it was exactly the same, it would then be from Ava's perspective. Because as the audience, we understand where she's coming from in a way that we didn't in the movie as it is until the end. And it's the same thing with Norman Bates. If at the beginning of Psycho, there was a scene of him dressed up as his mother, hearing his mother's voice being all crazy, then the rest of the movie, it would be, I don't know if it would necessarily be a worse movie, because I think there would be then a tension in his scenes with the rest, you know, the people he talks to, like, oh, they don't know he's crazy, but we do. And it just occurred to me that there are two twists in Psycho, and you knew about the shower scene going in, right?
Yeah, I guess I did.
Yeah, even without context, like, everyone's heard of the shower scene. But yeah. I think the fact that that's a twist has become, it's not even a twist anymore, just because you know what's going to happen. But if you're sitting down and for the first night, the premiere of Psycho,
holy shit, Janet Leigh died.
Yeah, exactly. Halfway through the movie, and then there's another half of the movie about two random new characters trying to figure out what happened to her. And it's not a twist, because the twist is superseded by what happens at the end. Because if you take that as a twist, the twist is, oh my god, Norman Bates' mom is crazy and she kills people. But it's eventually kind of folded into the ultimate twist of Norman Bates dresses up as his mom and kills people. I don't know how that factors into the theory we've got going, but it's interesting that we don't even think of that as a twist in Psycho anymore. It's just a thing that happens in Psycho because we understand the ending already.
Yeah. I think we might be inured to it a bit, but we're out of context. Here's a more recent one. And we're going to just have to, because I think this is a really useful touchstone for this conversation, so I'm just going to invoke a second spoiler. So I guess whenever this is posted, however this is posted, include the fact that this will include True Detective spoilers, season one. You saw that, right? You watched that show?
Yes, I did.
Okay. Now, the question I was thinking about when you were talking about this most recently version of it, where if we in the beginning, we watch Norman Bates, you know, brushing his wig and singing, I don't know, Daisy. It occurred to me that one of the distinctions we're talking about here is, can a procedural drama, an inherently procedural drama, a movie or a TV show where the premise of the tension is the procedure unfolding the answer eventually, as opposed to something else that's hiding in those clothes. Can it stand up to these kinds of scrutinies, or are they inherently meant to be read like little pulp magazines? You read it once until you're done pooping, and then you're done with that magazine forever. It doesn't intend for you to come back and read Johnny Gossamer 45. You know, you already did that. You're going to move on to Johnny Gossamer 46, and it's just this week's thing that you read, you know, like CSI or whatever, Law and Order. I wonder, because we heard, I have heard a few people complaining about the sort of predictable slash boring slash it didn't answer my holy shit, the twist ending expectations with Ex Machina. And we heard very similar shit in True Detective. And True Detective, ultimately, to their chagrin, the internet got all confused and thought it was going to end up being a question and answer, you know, a series of question marks and mirrors and stuff. And it turned out to be like, no, we were actually trying to make a point about theme and humanity and shit. Sorry. Oops. It's a very similar thing to Ex Machina. And I wonder if that, like, I'm thinking in terms of the fact that in the case of Ex Machina and Psycho, or the version of Psycho that we're pitching as being a secondary option, or at least drawing a contrasty option, Psycho 2. Like, if Psycho is the reductive title of a story where we're not asked to actually try to comprehend Norman Bates, then the version of Psycho that I'm talking about would be called, I don't know, Terrifying Machination of Biology, as opposed to being called Psycho or Bastard or Evil Motherfucker. It's just called, like, yeah, that can happen. You got to be careful how you raise kids. What I'm talking about is that movie might better illuminate you and enjoy better horror, if it can thread the needle, by bringing you so close to how Norman Bates happens that you understand him a little bit. Silence of the Lambs doesn't really even go there. I wonder if this is a totally postmodern idea that I'm talking about. I don't think it is. Like, even, you know, movies where serial killers are the premise, and in some cases the third act. Crime or serial killer movies where there's a twisty sort of thing in the third act, I guess is what I'm talking about. They're rarely asking you to understand what happened here and enjoy the horror of that really finely tuned cognitive dissonance that you're experiencing, knowing both sides, you know, containing two ideas at once here and going, I know why what this person is doing is wrong, and I also understand how it happened to them, and I wish I could make their brain not work like that or have them see the error of their ways, but I can't. And the fact that I'm sitting here having to watch it unfold is what's really getting me. I don't think I can actually think of anything that's doing that. I'm sure someone will think of it.
Oh,
but
yeah.
That's what I'm thinking of, is like, you, that kind of a story.
You got to watch Hannibal.
Ah.
Because, well, speaking of Silence of the Lambs, it's a lot of, sure, Hannibal Lecter media. I just watched the movie Manhunter recently, and it's very similarly.
That's a trip.
Yeah. About halfway through that movie, it kind of becomes half about Will Graham and half about the life of the killer, which is, it's a really interesting transition into a completely different kind of narrative, but it's doing a similar thing, and Silence of the Lambs does a similar thing, and Hannibal is just that every episode, because it's about Will Graham and Hannibal and their interactions. And that's actually an interesting example of what we're talking about, because in the show Hannibal, from Jump Street, you know who Hannibal is. You know he's a cannibal. You know he's a killer and a horrible psychopath. But the show doesn't get into that really until, like, the end of season one, just in terms of, like, depicting it. But every time there's a scene where he's, you know, the characters are over to his house for dinner and he's serving them some luxurious, delicious-looking meal, you as the audience know what that is. And it's horrifying, but it would be a very different show if it ended up being like a twist at the end of season one that, oh, Hannibal was actually the killer who was behind the whole thing. The show kind of allows you to have more knowledge than it does. Obviously the show knows who Hannibal is, but in terms of just what it's showing you, the show isn't showing you that he's a killer or a cannibal or an insane person. It is just showing you that he is kind of a weird, eccentric guy until it until it doesn't, and it doesn't play it as a reveal either, obviously, because like Ex Machina, it knows that you already know what's going on, so it can just kind of show it, and it's a surprise to the characters, but it...
Yeah, it can build a more complex point.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a great show. That's a really great show.
I'm interested. I'm ever closer to checking it out. I can't ever promise that I'm going to watch a TV show, because even TV shows that I like, I stop watching in the middle of them for no reason at all often. So it occurs to me that this is what I'm talking about is a paradigm that seems to have occurred quite a bit in movies of yesteryear. Without going into the specifics of what I mean, I can say that understanding, or at least a movie making an attempt to have you fully comprehend the horror of how someone's brain has brought them to a certain decision. Taxi Driver comes to mind. Full Metal Jacket comes to mind. At least the first half of Full Metal Jacket. Forrest Gump. No, I'm kidding. But those are movies where it anticipates the fact that you won't care about this movie in 25 years if the main takeaway is, so that's who the killer was. A movie where it's like, that's why the killer was, will probably stick with you better.
Hmm. Yeah.
Is that pithy? I think we can go out on that.
I think absolutely.
Not that's who the killer was, but that's why the killer was.
It'll be interesting to revisit Ex Machina with this in mind, knowing what's going on and being able to experience the events of the movie with a greater understanding of who all three of these people are. Because just to wrap up with discussion of that movie, I think the ending of that movie ultimately, this just occurred to me, it is a twist on the characterizations, on the personalities of all three of them.
Yep.
It's something about all three of them is revealed that even if it was stuff like with Domhnall Gleeson, I think you could read his character as the very, he's
white knightish.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, precisely.
Hideously condescending.
Yeah. I think it's very easy to read him that way right from the offset. I didn't until the end, but then...
And it's to his credit that he seems super sincere to, I don't know, at least us dudes, the first time we watched it, where it's like, he seems really sweet.
Yeah, he's the consummate nice guy.
No, that's
and it's
a hard thing to play and have it, you know, I don't know if it's a hard thing to play and have us miss the subtlety. Maybe we miss that subtlety all the time, but it's, he seemed super sincere to me and earnest and admirable until I think on second watching, you're going to watch this movie and you're going to go, this is the most hideously condescending behavior I've ever seen in my life.
Oh, and I'm sure, yeah.
Then again, we have to give him a little bit of credit, because at least at the beginning, it is built upon him not knowing whether or not he is talking to a person at all. Dude, this movie rolls deep. I can't wait to watch Ex Machina again.
How many dudes do you think walked out of it, like, really upset by the fact that she left him in that room? Just not understanding at all what we've just been talking about.
My giggle would increase with the scale of the number, I can tell you that. Yeah, man, that's interesting. Hey, that was fun. I like just throwing a big, weird, sort of poorly formed concept at you and seeing how you respond. You did good on your feet. You passed.
Oh, I'm glad. And that, yeah, this was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. Next time you have a weird thought that you wanna that you wanna throw at me, let me know.
Saddle you with?
Yeah. So I'm Josh Rosenfield.
I'm Teague Christie, and quite imposing.
And this was a podcast.
This was definitely a thing.
Yeah, I'm almost positive that this was a podcast. So, the end.